Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Members present, Senator Von Imhoff, good morning, ma'am. They're in Anchorage. We see you. Senator Wilson, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Co-Chair Stedman, and Senator Wilikowski, good morning. Today's agenda, HB 27, naming Irene Little Eye Weber Bridge. And this is the second hearing of HB 27. Madam Speaker, Stutes, if you'd like to bring yourself before the table, the committee would like to afford you a few minutes, as you were on other business yesterday, to make some opening comments before we get into invited and public testimony, ma'am.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I really appreciate this. This is really, this woman, Irene, had such an incredible impact on the community of Cordova that this isn't just exciting for her family, it's exciting for the whole community. I'm sure that Sarah explained yesterday, she had some alcohol issues at one point in her life, and once she crested the hump on those, she started running, and she herself was responsible for I don't know how many marathons in Cordova, and they still continue to this day even though she's passed. And I'm sure that Sarah let you know yesterday that the small I is no mistake. That's how she says her name. Oh, sorry. you should have told me.
No, I just thought you were getting a drink of water.
Oh, okay. Well, I would if I had some water here. At any rate, I'm delighted to have this opportunity to have this bill before you, because it's really an important bill to the whole community of Cordova.
We thank you for bringing this forward, and thank you for your comments. We're going to roll into invited testimony. I know some of our testifiers are on a tight schedule, and I'm going to open testimony. I'm going to start with Katrina Hoffman in Cordova. Katrina, can you hear us?
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Katrina Hoffman, and I am Irene's daughter-in-law. I married her baby Mike, and I know you'll hear from the family. But I didn't become part of this family until after I moved to Cordova about a decade ago. And it became immediately clear to me what a force of nature Irene was in this place. There aren't many people who leave behind the type of legacy she does, where she created not institutions, but community convening events that have lasted for decades, things like the Wild Salmon Run and the Cancer Walk. And she contributed in a way that many individuals never have the opportunity to do. She was a tiny woman. She was cheerful. And yet, you know, as her grandson Christopher noted at her memorial service, she was also a formidable deck boss on the family seiner. And he knew her to be a fearsome director of activities when out on the family fishing vessel. She was just an awesome human being. When my husband and son and I, Irene's youngest grandson, who's now 7 years old, when we drove out the Copper River Highway 2 years ago to look at bridges that could be named, we were just aghast when we realized that this particular bridge could be named after Grandma I. It's adjacent to community recreational areas where people cross-country ski on frozen rivers in the winter, where they four-wheel on sand trails all summer long, where they convene for barbecues on a sand dune, where the Scott River runs up to this exceptionally beautiful glacier. There's fireweed blowing in the wind. It's just awesome, and it is just like Irene. So I hope you will take the opportunity to, you know, codify this bridge being named after her, and thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Katrina, thank you for your testimony, and I think you might be on a new song there. Fireweed in the wind. You might want to work on that.
Thank you.
We're going to go to Kim, I believe, Aspeland, and this is the daughter of Irene Weber. And Kim, if you'd put yourself on the record and Please testify.
Hi, good morning. My name is Kim Asplund. I am Irene Weber's daughter, and I don't know how many of you had heard me speak last time, but just to say again how wonderful of a mother she was to me and our whole family and the community of Cordova. She had me doing volunteer work since I think I was 5 years old, and continue to do volunteer work growing for St. Jude's, for the SIDS event, for the American Cancer Society, and also for our community. She did have an alcohol problem for a very short time in her life, and I believe at that time that is what built her to be as strong of a woman that she had become. She had helped several people in the community overcome alcohol abuse and was a supporter for that for many people. And with her own addiction, she had found that running helped her. And she set out to do that, and she outran me doing marathons. And I only could do a half marathon, but she was very strong. She was very committed and very dedicated to her health, to our family's health, and to the health of the community. And she showed that every single day. And whenever she would see a runner on the road, she would put her arm up like she was tooting a horn, and she'd yell out the window and say, "Yay, good for you, keep going." And she was always inspirational. Her flowers were fireweed and the lupin and the wild irises, and that I'll be planting on her gravesite this weekend. And her memorial plate is going to say her name with a little I and her dates, and forever inspiring. And she will always be forever inspiring to our family and to the community of Cordova. And I assure you that everybody that crosses that bridge will feel inspired and loved and cheered on as they cross over that bridge. And I thank you very much for hearing me speak today on behalf of my mother, and ask for your support in passing this bill. Thank you again very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Mr. Weber from Cordova, son of Irene Weber. Mr. Weber, could you put yourself on the record, please, and begin your testimony?
Yeah, hi, good morning. My name is Mike Weber. I'm testifying to HB 27. Thank you for letting me speak and hear what I have to say. My mother was a wonderful person. She was a strong-hearted person. She was a commercial fisherman her whole life, married one of the top fishermen in the state, well-known, both of the people. My dad was the captain on the boat, but my mother was the admiral, and she planted that power, and my father understood it, and so did the crew. My father fished the state waters all around the state, and wherever there was time to drop my mom off on the beach to get her running, you would see her run anywhere between 100 to 200 yard beach back and forth for hours. People knew her around the state because of her running. They would cheer her on, whether it be in Cook Inlet, whether it be Prince William Sound, whether it be along the Alaska chain, Dillingham area, Togiak for herring. That's a great, she just gave motivation to people, and that motivation was inspiring. And also I'd like to say, if we could get her name on that bridge at 9 Mile, it would be an honor to me and to my family and to the community to see her name with the veterans that have their names on many bridges here in Cordova. That is going to be a powerful statement to me and to my family. She she was a leader in this community, a legacy in this community. She reached out to people, whether they just came to town. She invited them. She made them feel comfortable, made them feel wanted. And she did that her whole life. And when you talk to people and they mention my mom's name, that's one of the highlights that they like to talk about, how kind she was for people who just came into the town. And Alaska, you know, it's, you know, small towns are sometimes different, but she always made people feel welcome. Seeing her name on this bridge, it's at 9 mile, and when they start the half marathon at 13 mile on the Copper River Highway or 27 mile, these runners will run past that bridge and see her name. And I think that's going to be inspiring to them as well. And, this salmon run was a huge event that she started, and you would see anywhere between 200 to 400, 500 people in the community, and visitors participate in this event, and it was always motivating and powerful to see. And when she gave out awards at the end of the races, you know, she's a very small, tiny little lady that's pretty shy, but she always was able to give a speech in front of, you know, 200 or 300 people and do it with pride and dignity, and to honor the people that were receiving awards was something that she loved to do. And yeah, a great woman, a great mother, a great community advocate. We all love her. And thank you for your time and support on this bill here. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. That closes our invited testimony and open in public testimony. There's nobody online. Anybody in the room wishing to testify on this bill? Any further committee discussion? The will of the committee. Mr. Chairman,
I move that Senate Finance Committee move out House Bill number 27, version A, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
And I'll cover the fiscal notes. Department of Transportation, Highways, Aviation, and Facilities, Northern Region, component numbers 2068. It's a $10,200 fiscal note. It's UGF funds. Bill passes from committee. We're going to take a brief at ease while we switch chairs and sign the committee documents.
Come back on record. Next item on the agenda, House Bill 169, an act making appropriations for the public education and transportation of students. and providing for an effective date.
We could have Representative Dan Ortiz come forward, jump in the hot chair. He's got a trusty aide with him to bail him out on tough questions. And if he could present the bill to the Finance Committee, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Co-Chair Stedman and Bishop and members of the Finance Committee for hearing House Bill 169. For the record, I'm Representative Dan Ortiz, representing District 36, Southern Southeast Alaska.
For the record, Caroline Hamp, staff to Representative Ortiz.
Senator Stedman, House Bill 169 is an appropriation bill for the foundation formula and pupil transportation for fiscal years 2022 and 2023, and acts, and it's a House finance bill that's a separate appropriation bill from the regular operating budget. In order to pass funding for education early in the session for FY22, and to provides for forward funding for FY23. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, many of you have been in this building for a longer period of time than I have, and I'm sure over the years you've heard of the ongoing problem that we in the in this building create for districts throughout the state of Alaska, in that we oftentimes fail to pass our regular operating budget early enough in the session so that districts around the state can plan their own budgets and provide for their own budgetary needs, provide information to their communities about their operating budget and about how they're going to conduct the conduct business in the upcoming year. And this creates problems in the sense of they're oftentimes forced to send out layoff notices to teachers in the district because they just don't know what the funding level will be for their particular district. And in order to comply with contract requirements and things like that, they sometimes and often are forced to hand out layoff notices. I can remember earlier in my teaching career that I received one of those notices, and it was real simple. They said, you know, we just don't know what we're going to do next year for overall staffing based on the fact that we don't know our funding levels. And so, you know, Mr. Ortiz, you can view this as a notice of non-retention and tell and if we find out more information about our funding level. So House Bill 169 is an attempt to help alleviate that problem. I know that every member of this committee, I'm sure every member in this body and the entire legislature, education and student success is a high priority for the state. And keeping educators in the classroom is one of the most effective ways to address that priority. Members of this committee, HB 169 reflects the legislature's commitment to education, to school districts, and to teachers. And if passed, would help alleviate one problem that we have in relationship to a growing problem of not being able to retain our teachers at a higher and higher level as we move forward. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, for hearing HB 169.
Do we have any questions for Representative Ortiz? Senator Milikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill forward. I think this is a huge step forward in the way we fund education. I hope we do this more often. Do you know when the pink slips start to go out to teachers in the state?
Through the Chair, Senator Milikowski. I think that varies from district to district around the state. I've heard of some districts beginning to send out layoff notices in the middle of April, I think it is, for some districts, and for others it's later than that. And it varies, I guess, depending on the budget cycle for that particular area, for that particular school district. I believe it's my understanding that Juneau has one of the earlier layoff notice dates, but that's just anecdotal. I'm not for sure on that.
Other questions, committee members? Can you recall, Mr. Tease, if we've ever lowered a base student allocation number? And is this the targeted base student allocation number that's in the bill?
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Stedman, for that question. Not to my knowledge, you know, and that's another good point. You know, if there's one, not just one, but we all know that, you know, there's no question we are constitutionally bound to provide for, quote, an adequate education for all of our students throughout the state of Alaska. And that includes the financial commitment for the state to, you know, to bear that responsibility. It's a constitutional mandate. So there's just no question that we have to do this. We have to fund. And I don't look at it as having to do it. It's something that we all should, you know, take joy in doing and helping to provide for our kids' education. So, you know, the point is, as Senator Stedman, I think you raised it with your question, is that it's no question we're going to do this. So why not just go ahead and provide that information early so that, and in this case with this bill, not only early but provide for forward funding so that everybody is on the record that we are going to continue to fulfill our constitutional mandate, which is to provide for education throughout the state of Alaska.
And then if you could help us a little bit on the timing of the appropriation, where the funds are going to come from, or have any idea like that, how that structure is, and is there any litigation concerning this issue in play?
Thank you for that question, Mr. Co-Chair. Not to my knowledge, and again, I don't see how in this particular situation, because we're providing for forward funding for this existing legislative body, no one can argue that we are tying the hands or we're, you know, we're constituting or putting forward dollars that would tie the hands of a future legislature, because we will be that legislative body in FY23. So I could see your point where if we were doing this in FY23 and tying the hands of a new legislature coming up that would be deciding the budget for FY24, then I think the argument could be made. But with this particular situation, I don't think there's any threat of a lawsuit if this bill were to go forward.
Do you have any, Senator Wilson? No question? Do you have any other questions for the representative sponsoring the bill from the House Finance Committee? Seeing none, any closing comments before we set this bill aside?
I have no closing comments at this time, Mr. Co-Chair. I thank you for the opportunity to present this bill before this distinguished committee. Thank you. Okay,
thank you. And for those watching at home concerning K-12 education funding, there will be further information coming from the Finance Committee dealing with maintenance of effort with both there and the university and a lot of the federal assistance that's coming in for schools. There is some data sheets being put together that should reflect all the communities around the state. So we will have a better idea, all the communities will have a better idea of what pots of money and how much are available and coming concerning them. K-12 is no exception. And then we'll have to have some dialogue over the next year on how we track that and the impacts of the local K-12, because there's going to be a lot of money coming in the K-12 dealing with the federal stimulus out of Washington. Okay, well, thank you. We'll set this bill aside for further review.
Thank you.
Next up, the governor has a couple of amendments dealing with the operating budget, the capital budget, and the supplemental budget. And with us today, representing the administration, the Office of Management and Budget Director, Mr. Neil Steininger. If you can jump in the hot seat, Mr. Steininger. You've been here numerous times before, so you know the process. And if you could walk us through the operating, capital, and supplemental amendments that you would like this committee to consider for inclusion in the FY22 budget document.
Thank you. For the record, Neil Steininger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. In your packets, you should have four amendment packages. They are differentiated by operating, capital, supplemental operating, and supplemental capital. I'll be beginning with the FY22 operating governor amend package. this item has, or this spreadsheet has three items on it. You should have a memo followed by a summary spreadsheet. I'll be reading off of the summary spreadsheet. So the first item for FY22 operating amend is an adjustment to the cost of living adjustment made for court service officers and deputy fire marshals. Upon further review, after it was noted through the legislative process, it was realized that the 2% adjustment for the second year of this contract was applied to an incorrect base salary. So that requires an adjustment. The total there is $317,000, 300.2 of which is unrestricted general fund. And this accommodates a 4% salary adjustment made in the first year, and the 2% adjustment simply was made to the base salary and not the base salary plus the first year 4% adjustment. Item two is an adjustment to the investment management fees at the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. As a result of high returns and a larger account balance, some of their management fees, which scale as a percent of assets under management, need to be adjusted upward. This $60 million is an estimate. So if the investment management fees come in less than this amount, that money will just be placed back into the fund. Item three is three temporary positions for the Department of Transportation. As the Department of Transportation has been working through the complexities of the guidance and rules surrounding the federal relief coming in from the Federal Aviation Administration, Federal Transit Authority, and Federal Highway Administration in all three of the primary COVID funding acts, that created about nine pots of money, all with slightly different rules and slightly different reporting requirements, and they found that they need some temporary accounting staff to help manage to those rules.
In your notes here, that concludes the three on the operating budget, but on your notes here, help me understand what a long-term non-permanent, it seems counterintuitive there.
Chair Stedman, so in the classification system for state employees, we have permanent full-time employees, which are just what that sounds like, a full-time permanent employee. And then we have non-perms split into both short-term non-perm and long-term non-perms. And a short-term non-perm is limited to 90 or 120 days, depending upon the bargaining unit contract. But sometimes a need is a non-permanent need, but longer than 90 or 120 days. So we have this classification of employees called a long-term non-perm. So it's a temporary need that's longer than 120 days.
Okay, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steininger, on this point, going along Senator Stedman's line of questioning, so the department has the PCNs available, or are we gonna have to do a classification study, or help me on this? And the last thing is, when these funds are executed, these positions go away, I assume.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, this would be creating three new PCNs. And to kind of clarify further why they're labeled as long-term non-perms is that it's important as they hire those individuals that those individuals understand these positions will go away once this need and the federal funding expires.
Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any other collective bargaining agreements that are currently being negotiated that we might expect a supplemental request for?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the answer is yes. So we have two that I believe I have tentative agreements that have been sent to me this morning. So we should have further amendments related to those two bargaining units, and I believe there is a CERD that's outstanding. And we'll come before the committee with more information on those when we're able to transmit.
And if I could, and that will be within the next week, 7 days,
Chair Stedman, we are working to put together the formal backup to get this to you within the next 24 to 48 hours.
Okay, thank you. We have a follow-up by Wilikowski and then Senator Wilson. And Senator Olson, do you have a question? Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the permanent fund management fees, What is the fee rate? The 1%, 2%, 0.03%? What, do you know what that is?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I'd have to defer that to the Permanent Fund Corporation. I believe the fees vary depending upon the entity actually doing the management.
And it should be tied to the size of the asset base underneath as a percent. So as the permanent fund advances in value, the fees go up. So, okay, Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to go back on the previous question, what are the two that you that we're expecting soon, and what is which bargain agreement are we waiting on the third?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I believe I should have the supervisory unit and the Correctional Officers Association for you within the next 24 to 48 hours to transmit. We're just putting together the technical records so that Legislative Finance can put those adjustments in the right components. And the remaining, I believe, is LTC.
And we have, just for clarification of the members, we have expressed interest to Office of Management and Budget that they formalize their amendments and have the, and we keep all the paperwork in order, so we'll stand ready to take action on those when they're presented. Any other questions on the operating budget amendments? Seeing none, thank you. We'll now move to the next item, which is, I think, the capital budget. Is that what you want to talk about next?
Yes, Chair. So, I mean, the next item, at least on my stack, is the fiscal year 22 capital governor amend items. There should be a spreadsheet with two items on it. The first of these items is an adjustment to the normal Federal Transit Administration grant. One thing to note, this is not related to any federal COVID relief funding. This is an increase to the normal grant as a result of the FTA apportionment rising over the last several years and communities being able to submit applications through DOT. So this is passed through to community transit organizations. The increase is $25.26 million from a base of $10 million for a new total of $35.26 million. Item two is related to federal COVID relief. A portion of the Federal Highway Administration CARISA funding through Department of Transportation will be passed through to the Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transit Solutions Organization, or AMATS. This is a requirement of the CRIS Act that these monies be passed through to Anchorage, and that was just omitted from earlier appropriation vehicles, and that's $11.3 million of that funding coming into DOT.
We have questions on this from committee members. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at some of these DOT funding that's going on in Amendment Number 1 or Number 2, are any of these dealing with the Kabata issue that's been kind of downplayed over the last number of years? Is Kabata involved in these, in getting funding from this?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I do not believe either of these would deal with the Kabata issue, but I will confirm that with Department of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there questions for the OMB Director on capital amendments 1 and 2? Okay, thank you, committee members. We'll go on to next one, and that's the 21 supplemental operating. Is that correct?
Thank you, Chair Stedman. That's what I have in my packet as well. This should have a spreadsheet with three items on it. The first of which is for the Mount Edgecombe Boarding School. And this is an increase in the federal authority within the Mount Edgecombe Boarding School to accommodate COVID-19 relief. This is related to the relief funding managed by the Department of Education that gets spread out to different school districts. That funding's been placed in the Department of Education. However, for Mount Edgecombe to collect its portion of that, they need federal authority within their budget in the amount of $5.3 million. Okay. Item two is $410,000 of judgment, settlements, and claims. You can see here a list of the various judgment settlements and claims against the state. Item 3 is a reappropriation to the Marine Highway System Fund. On the next spreadsheet, you'll see a corresponding decrease in the supplemental capital budget. This is a reappropriation of the aviation match for fiscal year 21. The aviation match was waived in fiscal year 21 as part of one of the federal relief packages, and the Marine Highway System Fund is projecting a $5.5 million deficit at the close of this fiscal year, and so we're utilizing that reduced need for match in the aviation program to reappropriate money that was assigned to aviation match to backfill this need in the Marine Highway System Fund.
Okay. I have questions on mystery amendments. Okay, seeing none, we'll go on to the final supplemental.
And the final item is fiscal year 21 capital supplementals. You should have a spreadsheet with four items on it. The first of which corresponds with that transfer to the Marine Highway System Fund. This reflects the reduction in the capital budget for aviation state match of $5.5 million. Item 2 is $11 million from the CARES Act funding for rural airport deferred maintenance. This covers deferred maintenance at rural airports owned and operated by the state. Item 3 is a sortie for the Alaska International Airport System to utilize some of its COVID relief to pay down debt service. The COVID relief received by the International Airport System can be deposited into its International Airport System Fund as general revenue. However, in order to use it for anything outside normal day-to-day operations, they need an additional appropriation. This would allow them to use some of that money to pay down existing debt. And item 4 is another reappropriation of a portion of the aviation state match, this for $1 million. And this would be reappropriated to an emergency weather event capital project for the department to be able to respond to emergency weather events that are above and beyond the amount of funding available in their normal maintenance operating budget. So when we have, you know, extreme freeze events or avalanches, they would then have this $1 million to go to address those issues without having to come forward for individual supplementals for every weather event.
Okay. We have Senator Wilson and then Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see that debt service is being paid using some of the Federal CARES Act or ARRA funding. How much estimated totality is estimated debt service being paid with these funds?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, this would be $30 million in debt service for the Alaska International Airport System. I believe they were able to utilize other federal receipt authority at the close of last year to pay down some more debt service, but I don't have that number with me right now. I can get you a follow-up on that.
Well, what?
Yeah, just as a follow-up, are there other departments or other areas that are also using federal CARES funds to pay down the debt service? If that can be provided to the committee, that would be wonderful, Mr. Chair.
Run that by me again.
Oh, if we can get a list of there's other departments that are using Federal CARES Act funding to pay down their debt service, would also be a good list to have before the committee, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Steininger, is there other departments using the debt service buy down, and is there any information you can bring forward on that subject?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I'm not aware of any other departments specifically paying down debt service with Federal CARES Act revenue. I do know that the other body in their operating budget proposed to use some of the ARPA funding to pay down the state's debt service. However, that was just a replacement of general funds to pay annual debt service payments. But I can look into this and see if there's any other, you know, pockets of areas of smaller debt service not managed in that main section in the operating budget.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steininger, item number 2, FAA CARES Act Rural Airport Deferred Maintenance. I'd like to, you probably can't answer this question, but I'm going to take a liberal interpretation of the verbiage here, operational and maintenance, that could include maybe some capital expense for equipment. Could we get a confirmation if that interpretation is correct?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, one thing that I know from conversations with DOT and FHWA is that most of these funds can't be coming in through particularly FHWA, but some of the other pots of money coming to DOT. There's limitations on using it for the purchase of equipment itself, but the maintenance work generally is eligible. I'm sure there's some nuance since there are multiple pots of money and multiple sets of rules on this, but I can work with the department to determine if there is some allowability within one or any of the pots for purchase of equipment.
Thank you.
Hey, we have Senator Von Imhoff been online through the whole meeting. Do you have any questions, Senator Von Imhoff?
No, I appreciate it. I've been following along, and I don't have any questions at this time.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we see the reappropriations from the aviation match that's there, has been reappropriated to the Marine Highway System and the emergency weather events issue, where did this aviation money come from? Where was it originally planned for, or where was it originally allocated for?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, originally in last year's capital budget, there was $8.8 million in one appropriation intended for matching the airport improvement program. Between this 5.5 and 1 million, that's 6.5 of that 8.8 that's being reappropriated. The remaining amount is being reserved for potential non-federal participation costs, so costs on airport improvement program projects that aren't federally reimbursable. So originally that was unrestricted general fund intended to match the airport improvement program, but the change in the FAA rules allowed for us in just that 1 year to not be required to supply match for the airport improvement program. So that need went away.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. UGF, is there any other fund source that could be used besides unrestricted general funds?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, for specifically this weather events or Marine Highway System Fund?
Yes.
We could use just a straightforward UGF appropriation rather than a reappropriation, or could look at other fund sources, DGF fund sources that maybe have available balances. However, using this reappropriation is a place where we don't necessarily have a competing need in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have any other questions for the OMB director while he's in the hot seat? Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, just on that aviation match, is that, I guess I'm just trying to figure out in my head, is this a loss for airport improvements? Is there, or is that money available somewhere else, or is the need just not there anymore?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the airport improvement program, the match was waived, and also FAA has provided significant additional amounts of relief that can be applied to airport maintenance, improvement needs throughout the state. So the through all of these federal relief fundings, the total amount available for airport needs has grown significantly. But the amount of general fund match needed is, there's no longer the need for this general fund match. So the airports themselves aren't necessarily harmed by this use of the match, as there's other FAA money coming in that kind of backfills that amount.
Senator Olson.
On that question, does it slow down those projects that were supposed to be funded with this, since you're switching the match on it?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the projects that will be funded under the fiscal year 21 AIP will still be funded through the federal funds. So those federal funds are still available for use. It, you know, to my understanding, it should not slow down any of these projects.
Okay. Any other questions, final questions for the OMB Director, Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do, if we could go back to the supplemental operating budget request that was put forth by the governor under FY 2021, the judgment settlements and claims for $410,000. I'm looking at the amount there, but I was wondering if this is a supplemental, what other judgment settlements and claims money has been requested in the regular operating budget besides the $410,000?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, we can provide you a full list of the judgment settlements and claims, inclusive of these additional ones. There aren't any in the fiscal year 22 operating budget. Generally speaking, the way we manage judgments and settlements is in the supplemental budget after they have happened. So they're primarily always supplemental needs. But we can provide you a full list by case and amount.
Mr. Chairman, all I'm asking is how much was requested before the total amount that's in addition to this $410,000 for the where the state of Alaska lost the lawsuit.
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, I don't have the exact number in my head right now, but it is, you know, in the several million dollar range.
That's what I'm asking. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
If you can get back to the committee on that and even give the committee a breakdown, that would be appreciated. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, and I'd just like to request a list of the management fees, the $60 million in management fees, how much they are, who they're going to. That just seems like a huge amount of management fees on top of, I'm sure, tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in other fees that we're already paying.
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, I can work with the Permanent Fund Corporation to get you that information. I will say the increase in management fees is a result in market returns increasing the value of the fund. So while this is an increase in cost, it is, you know, met with a significant increase in earnings. So it is sort of a good news increase in costs, if you will. But we can provide you more information about where those management fees go and how that structure is worked out.
Okay. Any other questions for the OMB Director? Okay, that'll conclude this morning's meeting. We are going to stand in recess, play in recess. You don't have to stand until 1 o'clock. But we'll reconvene at 1 o'clock for the introduction of the Senate Finance Committee substitutes to Senate Bill 49, the operating budget, and Senate Bill 51, the mental health budget. This budget presentation this afternoon, starting at 1 o'clock, will be looking at reoccurring revenue versus reoccurring expenditures without a lot of fund source changing and fiscal year maneuvers to artificially lower the appearance of the cost structure of the state. So we're going to put that on the table at 1 p.m. That will start our budgetary discussions here going forward over the next 2 weeks. We'll be building upon this presentation this afternoon, again over the next couple of weeks, with several other committee substitutes as we layer in different federal relief monies and other transactions as far as adjusting fund sources, and as we move to try to complete our budgetary process. And we are also waiting patiently for the House, the other body, excuse me, to send us over the companion operating budget bill. We may not have that for several days, so we're going to try to advance the process as much as we can, which is be kind of out of the ordinary flow. So we will then try to minimize the amount of time and days that it'll take to put the final budgets together after we get, or after we have receipt of the House or the other body's version. That's kind of the general trend. We're still trying to conclude our business by the 19th of May. That's a constitutional deadline. We don't know right now if we're going to make that or not. We are going to do the best we can to be concluded by midnight on the 19th of May. We are at ease till 1 p.m. Come back after recess. Senate Finance Committee's call to order, 5th of May, 2021. Time's about 3 minutes, 4 minutes after 1 p.m. This afternoon, back from recess, is Senator Olson, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Wilson, Senator Hoffman, myself, Stedman. Senator von Imhoff is joining us from Anchorage, and Senator Bishop will be along shortly. He's got other duties. We have three items this afternoon on the agenda. Adoption of the committee substitute for Senate Bill 49 is the operating budget. Then we'll look to adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 51, mental health budget. And we'll have a fiscal update from the Legislative Finance Director, Alexi Painter. But in just prefacing the meeting this afternoon, and for those watching at home, what the committee has been working on is a base budget with fund source exchanges out and COVID money out and other transfers from other fiscal years out. And basically, think of it as looking at reoccurring revenue against reoccurring expenditures in our operating budget. So this will be our base that we work off of. This budget presentation today and this committee substitute will include all the subcommittee work, and then after today I'll be looking for committee members for any potential amendments or issues that they see in the budget. Hopefully they can get back to the chairman's office by midday Friday. Just give us a heads up if you see errors, omissions, and or you have amendments or things that you feel need to be addressed further. So that's kind of the lay of the land going forward. So we'll start with Senate Bill 49, which is the operating budget. So Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Finance Committee adopt Senate Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 49 version N as our working document.
And I'll object for discussion, and we'll have Mr. Pete Eklund, who's our lead operating budget aide to the Finance Committee, walk through the committee substitute that's on the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Pete Eklund, staff to Senator Stebbins and the Finance Committee. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to be reading off a document that you all have, in case you want to reference as I'm going. First, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to talk about the structure of the bill in front of you. The bill has been divided into sections and groupings to attempt to make it easier to understand for the committee and the public. There's a number section, like there usually is, Mr. Chairman, and there's multiple number sections. Sections 1 through 3 are the regular operating budget, which contains the recommendations from all the finance subcommittees. Sections 2 and 3 are the funding source roll-ups of all the appropriations made in Section 1. Sections 4 through 6 are the number sections operating supplemental items. And so correspondingly, Sections 5 and 6 are the funding source roll-ups of all the supplemental operating items contained or listed in Section 4. Further, Mr. Chairman, Sections 7 through 9 are the number sections capital supplemental items. Sections 8 and 9 are the funding source roll-ups of all the supplemental capital items listed in Section 7. Mr. Chairman, most appropriation bills, that was a number section. Most of them also have a language section. And Mr. Chairman, the bulk of the supplemental language items have been grouped together at the beginning of the language section. These variant supplemental language appropriations could be either for operating or capital items, as well as direct or those inflexible ARPA, CARISA or CARES, or other federal acts that require appropriation to be accepted. Sections 10 through 17 of the language section are the bulk of those variant language supplemental items for FY21 that I just referred to. The remaining sections, which are sections 28 through 59, are mainly the more normal or usual FY22 appropriations. Now to the substance of the bill, Mr. Chairman. There are many reports that describe in varying degrees of detail the funding laid out in the committee substitute before you. For anyone interested, there will be even more detailed reports posted on Legislative Finance's website after this hearing. One change incorporated into this draft committee substitute are the many transactions. There are many transactions approved to accommodate the governor's request to consolidate human resources and procurement into the Department of Administration. So if committee members notice small differences between their subcommittee recommendations and what is contained in this draft, that is likely the reason for that. Mr. Chairman, I will now go over verbally at a high level the dollars and fund sources appropriated in this bill. I will list out in a minute all the reports that you have in front of you, and I may reference them, but I do not intend for members to try and look at each of the reports while I am speaking. That will just get us way too bogged down and confused, Mr. Chairman. I'm also going to use round numbers, otherwise all of our brains may go numb. So to the totals, Mr. Chairman, for the FY2 operating budget totals, all funds, $10.78 billion, unrestricted general funds, $4.56 billion, and general funds of $5.42 billion. Then, Mr. Chairman, going on to the supplemental section for the FY21 operating supplementals, all funds of $1.27 billion, unrestricted general funds of $77.2 million, and all general funds of $76.1 million. And because it's lower than the UGF number, Mr. Chairman, because there's a negative DGF supplemental of just over $1 million. And then moving on to the FY21 capital supplemental totals, Mr. Chairman. All funds, $168.7 million. Unrestricted general funds, $10.2 million. And general funds of $30.8 million.
I think that's FY22 capital supplementals.
FY21, it's a typo on your sheet, Mr. Chairman. It should say FY21. Okay. Mr. Chairman, you have a packet of reports in front of you. You've got a blue sheet on top labeled CS1 reports master sheet. And so that all these reports detail and much go through over in much greater detail all the fund sources and dollars listed in the committee substitute. The colored master sheet should help you locate the reports that are listed that you may want to look at. And I would note, Mr. Chairman, there are three spreadsheets in your packet that are listed there. And the committee went over those, OMB went over those three spreadsheets last Friday. And they cover operating capital governor supplemental requests, as well as the federal direct or inflexible funds usage. As members of the public have time to review them, you will see that we have added a Senate column that denotes whether a request has been included in the CS in front of you or not. Further, there is a column labeled LANG, which stands for language, and a Y in that column denotes that an item, if it's included, can be found in the language section. And an N in that column instructs you to look, if it's included, instructs you to look in the supplemental number sections. So that's intended to help people locate items that are in the bill, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, rather than go over all the numerous requests that are addressed in this bill and that are found on those spreadsheets, I will now highlight some language items of note. Section 14F, the administration requested an extension of an estimated to be $9 million federal appropriation that's related to the CARES Act funding from last year, and we are partially granting that request. There is approximately $331 million of coronavirus relief funds, or CRF funds, associated with that estimated to be $9 million appropriation that we are not rolling forward to next fiscal year. Section 20 amends the current year federal or other program receipts, or RPL language, to restrict designated program and federal receipt authority being added to the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. And it also restricts funds being added in the RPL process for natural gas pipeline expenditures. It also restricts the RPL process from being used for the flexible CARISA DOT funds and for the flexible ARPA funds. Further, this restriction for the RPL process also restricts the RPL process being used for any future federal funds appropriated by the 117th Congress for infrastructure, jobs, or as part of the American Jobs Plan, and federal funds related to the economic recovery. Section 21A is a supplemental fund cap of $21.3 million of unrestricted general funds to the Community Assistance Fund to bring the balance of the fund to $90 million, so the FY22 payout to communities will be $30 million. Section 21B is a $30 million unrestricted general fund appropriation to the Disaster Relief Fund. The administration had asked for a reappropriation for this, and we are using UGF. Section 21C is a $6.7 million reappropriation of FY21 FAA match that is no longer needed for match for that purpose. And it's going to the Alaska Marine Highway Fund to bring the AMHS fund balance up to zero at the end of FY21. Section 27 is a MPRA impact grant program. The committee substitute updates the FY21 estimate available and lists out the projects that are to receive funding in FY21. Section 31 updated the Alaska Industrial and Development and Export Authority, or ADA, dividend to the correct amount of $17.3 million. Section 32E proposes to transfer $2 billion from the permanent fund earnings reserve to the corpus of the fund, leaving an estimated $9.6 billion ERA balance of realized earnings that would be spendable. Section 35 is carry-forward language allowing FY21 federal funds from mandate billings to be carried forward into FY22 for the Anchorage Correctional Complex. Section 37, there's an appropriation that was deleted. That is former Section 13E. That was a request to carry forward $35 million of Medicaid lapse into FY22, and that was not granted. Section 38, there was a deleted request that was Section 14F, which was open-ended federal authority to the Department of Labor for employment and training services. In the Section 40 area, there was a deleted request that was former Section 16E, which was a reappropriation request of $5 million in lapsing fire suppression funds to the Department of Natural Resources for firebreak activities. That will be addressed in the capital budget. Section 41B through J, this is the 18-month Marine Highway funding plan. The total MHS budget for 1 year is proposed to be the same level the legislature passed in the current year, $123.5 million. The proposal uses a mix of CARISA, FTA, and FHWA federal funds, just over $53 million, and $66 million of UGF and $4.4 million of other funds to support Marine Highway operations for the next calendar year. This one-time 18-month funding plan uses one-time federal funds and UGF to move the funding of the system onto a calendar year basis. Moving to a calendar year funding, moving to calendar year funding will allow managers to get the ferry schedule out to the public in July or August for the following calendar year. Having a reliable schedule out in advance has shown to increase system Marine Highway system revenues by over $5 million. Section 41K, Mr. Chairman, is a $10.5 million appropriation of federal CARISA and ARPA FTA funds for the coordinated transportation grants. Section 41L is $6 million of federal CARISA grants to the Inter-Island Ferry Authority to replace their depleted reserves and allow them to continue operation. Section 44, the debt and other obligations section, we deleted the former Section 20, which would have allowed the Department of Revenue to issue revenue anticipation notes. Section 44L is full funding for school bond debt reimbursement of $83.5 million, $52.7 million of which is UGF, and $30.8 million is from the school fund. Section 45C is the same RPL restrictions I listed earlier that we amended for FY21. It's using those same RPL restrictions for FY22. Section 46G is $12.4 million in FY22 PCE formula payments to the Community Assistance Fund. Section 46H is $17.6 million in FY22 from the general fund to the community assistance fund to bring the balance of the community assistance fund back up to $90 million. So there can be a payout of $30 million next year in FY23 to the communities. Section 46K is $34.2 million from the general fund to the Regional Education and Attendance Area Fund. That's full funding, Mr. Chairman. We deleted the former Section 22U, which was $50 million in program receipt authority for AGDC for deposit into the Alaskan Liquefied Natural Gas Project Fund. We also deleted former Section 22V, which was open-ended federal receipt authority for AGDC. Section 46U, Mr. Chairman, is oil and gas tax credit section. The proposal is to fully fund tax credits, but not to exceed $114 million from the unrestricted general fund. Last page, Mr. Chairman. Section 46V, $100,000 from the general fund program receipts collected by the Division of Motor Vehicles to the Abandoned Motor Vehicle Fund for removing abandoned vehicles from highways. Section 47L, it's fund transfers. It authorizes repayment of WAMI loans to the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education to be deposited to the Higher Ed Fund. That's estimated to be just over $500,000. Section 47M is a change in the estimate to zero of money in the large passenger vessel gaming tax account that would be deposited into the general fund. Section 52A is new, Mr. Chairman. It's a statutory budget reserve section. 52A would take the unencumbered balance of the unrestricted general fund available for lapse on June 30th of 2021 and appropriate them to the SBR, statutory budget reserve, and that's estimated to be $100 million. Section 52B is an appropriation of the sum of $325 million from the general fund to the SBR. Mr. Chairman, the committee substitute in front of you deletes, there are no constitutional budget reserve sections. And just on the effective dates, Mr. Chairman, this committee substitute makes supplementals that are for agency supplemental funding. It makes them effective April 15th. And June 30th is a standard effective date for any lapse or reappropriation provisions. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Initial questions. A lot of information. But Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 31. It talks about the ADA dividend, and you say that's the correct amount. What is there a percentage in statute that is required, or is it a range?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there is a statutory formula.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I assume this just is. Is it a range, or is it just a set number?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I don't remember the formula, but okay. There is one that says some percentage. I think it's half of their earnings.
We'll have Ledge Finance in front of us in a few minutes. We can ask them that question just as a reminder, or get that clarified. Any other initial questions? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The general public should be aware that even though the permanent fund dividend amount is not in here, it is the intent of the Senate Finance Committee to fund a dividend. Is that correct?
That is correct. Just for clarifications for those at home dealing with the permanent fund, two issues in here. One of them, non-existent, is the dividend that has yet to be taken up by the committee. The intent here is to work on that. And over the next couple of weeks. And then the $2 billion transfer from the earnings reserve account to the corpus is kind of a placeholder. The discussion will be had at the committee with a further review of the earnings reserve account and input from all committee members, and committee will decide if they're to increase it or decrease it. It's pretty much a placeholder, as reflected in the poster check behind us on the wall. Was last legislature put in $4.9 billion. This is $2 billion, and again, it's just so we can have that conversation, and whatever the committee decides to do, we will put an adjustment in the bill and do it. It could be higher, it could be lower. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point, how was $2 billion decided on, as opposed to go to $3 billion or down to $1 billion? Or for that matter, Chairman, why was it all swept into the
Chairman
cost?
Just grabbed it out of the air as a placeholder. I looked back at a couple of inflation-adjusted numbers, inflation-proofing numbers, or back one and forward one, and rounded just to give us a starting point. No real magic on that, but we'll have that data sheet in front of the committee when we have that in discussion and decide. And I also thought it'd be nice if the committee members had a little time to think about what they thought should be done with that subject matter. Everybody was here at the committee last couple of years and we talked about that, so we'll work on that over the next several days.
Last question, Mr. Chairman. Sure. Section 41, with the Marine Highway System going to an 18-month plan, why not go to a 6-month plan and go on to the calendrical year starting in 22?
Go to a what? A 2-year?
No. Right now you've got an 18-month plan because you want to get on the calendar year.
Right.
why, instead of biting off such a big chunk, why not go to a six-month funding of the Marine Highway System so it gets on in January of 22?
What we did with the Marine Highway is we basically added 6 months to the appropriation one time, and then we would later on we'll be able to make some adjustments with some of this COVID money and work on some of the smoothing issues on the general fund, but that would allow then the ability to go back the following next year to a 12-month appropriation again. We'll be back on a 12-month cycle, but there would be that six-month lead time built into it. So does that clear that up?
Yes, it does.
Senator Wilson.
Mr. Chair, with the deletion of the CBR sections, would we still need a three-quarter vote in order to enact this budget?
Right now, there's no need for that. But as we continue on down the budgetary process, that need will most likely arise, and then we'll have to add it into the budget documents. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 44L, the school funding for school debt bond reimbursement, there's $30,799,000 from school fund. Is that typical, or does it typically draw from the school fund?
Could you repeat the last part of your question?
Yeah, I'm just curious if that's typically how we've funded school debt bond reimbursement in the past, through a portion of the school fund.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, yeah, that's correct. And the number used there on the sheet, $30,799,500, is the amount available that's unspent in other parts of the budget for that purpose.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 46U, I know this has been an item of discussion in front of this committee and in front of the full Senate and the full House. The language for funding these credits has been pointed out many times by Senator Wilikowski is may, and the language for the dividend is shall. So although we are going to address the dividend at some time, I feel a little bit uncomfortable in funding the credits at this juncture without knowing what the support is for a level of funding that is sure to have different opinions at this table. I just wanted to make that statement, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, thank you. And on that item, I think the original submission was for about $30 million or so, or $60 million, and then there was an amendment that came in from the administration. We added it. That numeric is certainly open for discussion by committee members, and there may be amendments put on the table on that issue. But that's where that number came from. We have not had that, as brought up by Senator Hoffman, we have not had that discussion at the table. So we'll most likely be having that discussion, so that number may change. Any other initial questions?
Initial questions. Do we have any discretionary capital funds?
Unfortunately, this is the operating budget. We're going to work on that. Okay, seeing no other initial questions. I'll go ahead and remove my. Okay, let's have a brief at ease. Back on record, I couldn't see the other senator up in Anchorage. She's so far away. Senator Von Imhoff, do you have questions and comments on the draft CS in front of you?
Thank you. Yes, some of the other senators asked a lot of the questions, but Section 52 on page 101, the Statutory Budget Reserve Fund, the sum of $325 million. Can you just comment on that one? How are we, the unencumbered balance of any unrestricted general funds of $325? Could you just explain that section, please?
At the end of the fiscal year,
Well, let me preference the explanation first. Again, that is another issue, like many issues in this budget, that there may be concerns or interest or discussion or even amendments or changes by the committee. But as proposed, was to, at the end of every fiscal year, the excess money in revenue in the general fund is swept into the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. And that's a normal process. And what this does, it basically front runs the balance available to sweep to the Constitutional Budget Reserve, which takes a three-quarter vote to get it out, and puts it in another savings account, the statutory budget reserve, that takes a majority vote instead of a three-quarter vote to get it out. It makes it more accessible. The dollars that are in the savings accounts total would be the same. They're just, we'd be using the statutory budget reserve, which was drained to near zero here a few years ago. And that's an issue that, again, the committee, and we'll have some discussion, and if the committee decides that they want to change that, that's will be appropriate. Or if they want to leave it, that's fine too. We'll have those discussions coming up. But that's the issue there. We'll also have the account balances projected account balances presented by Ledge Finance here in a few minutes. Does that help, Senator Von Imhoff?
Thank you, sir.
And Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 32E. We're transferring, with this language, transferring $2 billion from the permanent fund earnings reserve account to the corpus, which has, 55, $60 billion in it. How is that number and that proposal brought forward to be included in this budget?
We need to make sure that we are inflation-proofing the permanent fund. And even though we did a substantial appropriation that's reflected here on the wall for forward inflation-proofing, this would be an additional appropriation into the constitutionally protected portion. And again, this is just a starting number for the committee to consider. The committee may consider not doing it at all, or decreasing that or increasing that. I think what we need to do is have a presentation on the earnings reserve, the permanent fund itself, the two components, the constitutionally protected side and the earnings reserve side. And just as a reminder for those at home, the dividend comes out of the earnings reserve. We'll see what the total balances are in that. I think it's somewhere unencumbered around $10 billion, maybe encumbered with the encumbered portion, maybe up around $17 billion. But we'll have accurate numbers coming to the committee members, because that will also be needed when we discuss the dividend, and also if we want to do inflation-proofing contribution to the fund. So it's just a starting point to make sure we have that discussion at the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Okay, I think I will remove my adoption or my objection to the adoption of the CS. So any further objection to the adoption of the CS? Okay, we have adopted the CS. So we'll set that aside for further review. And again, we'll start the discussion on some of these items, the dividend, the future contributions to the constitutionally protected portion, any concerns or issues committee members have, and amendments. So I try to get those, some of that data back to our office by midday, mid-Friday, and, you know, work with Mr. Eklund and other committee aides, and we'll sort out whatever issues come to the table, or concerns committee members have. Now we'll move on to Senate Bill 51, the mental health budget. We have a motion to adopt the CS, Senator Wilson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt the Senate Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 51, version G, as its working document.
And I'll object for purpose of explanation, Mr. Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You'll be happy to know I do not have a document to read on this appropriation bill. Mr. Chairman, all the dollars appropriated in the mental health bill were accounted for in all the reports, operating budget reports, Mr. Chairman. As is standard practice with the mental health bill, the other body will remove capital projects that are listed in the mental health capital portion of the mental health bill, and the Senate will do the exact opposite of whatever the other body did, so everything is conferenceable. And so, Mr. Chairman, the other body removed, there's six proposed mental health capital projects in the mental health bill. The other body removed five of those projects, and we are funding the one that they did not remove. We're funding the one that they did remove, and that is deferred maintenance and accessibility improvements for $500,000. So, Mr. Chairman, that's really the only thing I'd like to highlight in the mental health bill.
Okay. We have any questions on the mental health bill? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the adoption of Senate Bill 51, mental health bill. Any further objections to the adoption of the CS? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and adopt the CS as our working document. And then we're going to shift gears a little bit here, and we're going to go to the fiscal update with Senate Committee Substitute, and we'll have the Director of Legislative Finance come forward, Mr. Alexi Painter. He will talk about the fiscal position that this bill puts us in.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. And before I get started, to respond to Senator Wilikowski's question, the ADA dividend can be anywhere between 25 and 50% of net income, and the $17.3 million represents the full 50% calculation.
What percent is that? A good
50%.
50?
Yes.
And you better speak loud because of all this muffling we have to wear here.
Try to get right up on the mic.
Does that answer your question, Senator Wilikowski?
Yes, thank you.
So the first slide here is a fiscal summary reflecting just this bill, essentially. So this goes back to fiscal year 20 and then represents the final budget, including supplementals that year. Fiscal year 21 includes the enacted budget and then the supplementals included in this bill. And then in FY22, right now, we're only including the appropriations in this bill. The others are question marks at this point. So you can see the numbers for supplementals on line 9 and line 12 that were referenced by Mr. Eklund. And then that results in a total deficit in fiscal year 21 of just over $600 million. The operating appropriations in this bill on section or line 6 for fiscal year 22. If that were our only appropriations, we would have a $172.4 million pre-transfer surplus. And then after fund transfers, we would have a surplus of $157.8 million. However, that reflects a budget with no capital budget and no permanent fund dividend. So obviously that's not complete, but just based on the bill, that's where we are so far.
Do we have an expectation of the capital budget numeric that would hit against that 157?
Mr. Chairman, the next slide shows that. This is definitely a placeholder. This uses the governor's amended capital budget, which is $62.2 million, and then adds unrestricted general funds in place of the AHFC bonds. That bill has not advanced very far in the legislative process, so we're not relying on that. And so just adding those two together would be a capital budget of $166.2 million of unrestricted general funds, which is highlighted in red in line 10. And then that brings us down to a post-transfer deficit of $8.4 million using this placeholder. And again, you know, it could end up higher or lower, and this still does not reflect a permanent fund dividend.
Does not reflect?
A permanent fund dividend.
So what you're telling us is we're basically our reoccurring revenue equals reoccurring expenses. If we pay all of the oil tax credits and don't pay a dividend.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. So that's pretty close to zero, I would say, because it's we're estimating, just as a reminder, we're estimating volume and particularly price of oil from July 1 this coming summer clear to the end of a year from June 30th. So we expect you to be close, but we don't expect you to be within $8 million.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. And as oil prices go up and down, this we could end up, you know, with a surplus or deficit based on this. It's hard to project at this point.
We want to go to the next slide. I guess we'll walk through that.
So there were some discussion of this already, but just to talk about the use of the lapsing funds, because I think this is one of the more confusing aspects here. So according to the Office of Management and Budget, they sent a letter on March 4th, I believe, about their lapsing report. They projected, actually at the time, $110.7 million of unrestricted general funds appropriations in FY21 would lapse. Since then, the Medicaid number has been revised down. It was originally projected that $100 million would lapse, and now the estimate is down to $90 million. And you can see that the majority of that 100.7 is still from Medicaid, $90 million in that first line. An additional $4 million is from the Department of Corrections, $5.7 million from the Department of Education, and then $1 million combined in the other agencies. So in the CS in front of you, that $100.7 million is directed to the statutory budget reserve. In the governor's budget, $35 million of that was directed, was reappropriated to fiscal year 22. And in the other body, in the budget that's on the House floor current or in House rules currently, about $87 million of the Medicaid lapsing funds are directed towards the FY22 budget as well. The next item, in fiscal year 20, there was a multi-year appropriation for COVID relief that was directly made out of the CBR of $75 million. That appropriation was made before the CARES Act was passed by Congress that provided the state with other funds that could be used for COVID, for the direct COVID costs. And as a result, essentially none of that funding has been used. In the governor's budget, excuse me, $30 million of that would be directed to the Disaster Relief Fund, and then the remaining $45 million was directed to be carried forward in fiscal year 22. However, those items would require a three-quarters vote of the legislature because these were directly from the CBR. Any modification of an appropriation from the Constitutional Budget Reserve would require a three-quarter vote. So the Senate as committee substitute allows that full amount to lapse into the Constitutional Budget Reserve as well. And that's also how the other body's budget is written at this point. Last year, in addition, the legislature funded about one quarter of the budget directly from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. And so that meant that about $980 million of the budget was directly funded out of the CBR. Based on the revenue forecast at the time, post-veto, we essentially had a balanced budget after that transfer. However, higher revenue expected since then leads to a projected $367.5 million post-transfer surplus in fiscal year 21 after supplementals. Essentially what that means is that that $980 million turned out to be more than we needed to draw from the CBR. It's already been authorized, so the remainder, if we did nothing, would just lapse back to the CBR. The CS in front of you redirects $325 million of that post-transfer surplus to the statutory budget reserve. So essentially, instead of that money entirely lapsing back to the CBR, a portion of it is going to go to the SBR under the CS.
Senator Wilson.
I guess, Mr. Chair, if there could be given an explanation of why when the appropriations from the CBR to be reappropriated, we need a three-quarter vote, but not a three-quarter vote to divert the funds to the SBR.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson. So because they're not being appropriated from the CBR, it doesn't require a three-quarter vote. However, at the end of the year, the sweep provision would capture those funds because the SBR is a sweepable account. So to keep them out of the CBR would require a reverse sweep vote on July 1st. So that would be a three-quarter vote at that point. So it does not permanently keep them out of the CBR, but it does put them up somewhere on June 30th that's a sweepable fund, and then we could reverse the sweep on July 1st with a reverse sweep vote.
Thank you.
Or on the reverse sweep, or August 1st or November 1st or whenever we get to dealing with the reverse sweep, if it's not reversed.
And so then this next slide shows the balance of reserve accounts and how they get there under the CS. So our starting balance in the Constitutional Budget Reserve in the beginning of FY21 that's available for appropriation is projected to be about $1.4 billion. There's some deposits and earnings. You can see the $980 million of direct appropriations that come out, the $75 million from that that COVID-19 appropriation goes back in, the post-transfer surplus goes back in, and then the SBR transfer comes out. All of that nets to an ending balance of $615 million roughly. In fiscal year 22, and this is based on the placeholder capital budget, there would be some deposits and earnings, a small post-transfer deficit in this case, and an ending balance of $657 million. The statutory budget reserve would receive the $325 million appropriation and then the $100.7 million of lapsing appropriations for an ending balance of $425.7 million. So combined about $1 billion in reserves. And so if you did not have these SBR appropriations, then the CBR balance at the end of FY21 would be approximately $1 billion based on this CS. And Mr. Chairman, that is all the slides I have. I'm happy to answer any other questions the committee has.
Pretty high level. I think what we're going to need some assistance from Ledge Finance, maybe with Alaska Permanent Fund, so we can get an estimate of and a breakdown of the earnings reserve account and forward projections, of course, on it. And then also the statutory dividend, if they could get some assistance for the committee members to see what the statutory dividend would be for FY22, and then we can have you back, or assistance from the permanent fund if need be, but have Ledge Finance back and lay this out for the committee members so they have a holistic picture for that discussion. As referenced by earlier question from Senator Hoffman, there's intertangling of appropriations and political relationships that the committee members have to consider. So we'll take a look at that stuff and talk about it. And also, it'd be nice if you could come in that presentation with a little history of contributions into the corpus of the permanent fund. So when the committee members ask what's the effect of no contributions or the $2 billion or $4 billion or whatever other number that they want to have a discussion on, it'll be easy for Ledge Finance to be able to just make that modification. We can have that discussion. Is there other information that we should give Ledge Finance a heads up on that the committee members might want to see? Interrelationships or as of today? Okay, seeing none, but just get back to my office, any of the committee men, on any of those type of subjects, and we'll get the data run so everybody has the same information and again, a holistic view. So do we have any other questions for Ledge Finance while he's in the hot seat? I would also like to ask that you come forward with an adjusted oil price of $70 as a hypothetical for FY22. I'd like to see what that looks like, if it's $300 million or $350 million or some number. Just looking at the revenue side, if oil prices remain strong, we all know what oil prices look like when it's weak. We've lived through that. We could estimate that pretty easy at the table. So anyway, if you could prepare that stuff, get back to my office when you're ready. We'll have you come back to the committee as soon as reasonably possible so the committee members have time to digest information and think about the policy call they want to make or advocate. Do we have any other questions, concerns, issues for the day? Okay, so thanks everybody for coming in today. This will conclude the meeting. Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., we'll start again, and I will let the committee members know as soon as Ledge Finance is ready. We'll fit it in, and we'll start having this dialogue on some of these punch points that we're looking at. If you see an error, a misstatement, or something in the bill, let us know. If you're interested in amendments, try to get them in. By the midday Friday, let us know. We'll work on those issues so it's a smooth process and there's no misunderstanding or duplicates or anything. And with that, we are adjourned.